Hey, welcome to another episode of Freebie Friday. I'm John St. Augustine. Whether you like it or not, you must like it because you're listening. And even if you don't like me, you can listen. It's all good. It's all free and it doesn't cost you a dime. These bonus episodes are only made possible by the people who subscribe to the main body of work of the Life 2.0 podcast. So if you run into them in the virtual landfill of Facebook, which I'll get to in just a second, you should send them a note and say thanks because you pay the $20 a month, $5 a week, 66 cents a day. I get a chance to listen to some other podcasts that may entertain, inform, and inspire for free. I'm always looking for the recycling effect on that. And, you know, the whole pitch here with podcasting, as I've learned from some of my friends that do this, like Gary Meyer and a couple other people, is you give out a bunch of free ones, you make two or three that you pay for play, and eventually the people who hear them for free realize the value in it, and then they become subscribers. There's no big secret to this. If I had 5 million people listening or 500,000 people or 5,000 people listening, I'd probably have a sponsor, but I don't at this point, and maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't. So in the meantime, the subscribers really keep this thing floating. So to all of you, I thank you so much for doing that, chunking $20 a month down, which is for some people a lot of money, and some other people say it's the best money they spent every month. So thank you so much for that. I have taken a week out of the landfill of Facebook, which even I dipped my toe in a couple times because I had messages from people and like that. And it's like going to the circus for me. When I'm in the circus sitting in the stands, I realize why I don't want to be a clown down in the ring and performing for people. And on the other hand, even when everybody's under the tent, we're all part and parcel of the circus. So standing outside of the tent for about a week now, cleansing to me, revealing to me, insightful to me, fascinating to me that it was in 2009, so 8 years ago, that I first learned about Facebook. When I was a kid growing up, Facebook meant something very different. My mom would say, "Why don't you go stick your face in a book?" Then I would read the book. So these days, of course, it means something very, very different, and billions of people dive into the landfill every day at all hours of the day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year plus leap year. And it's a conglomerate of stuff. And I think like most things, when you're swimming in it, you can't see it. It's only till you get out. It's like you're swimming in a river that's full of shit or shit creek. And everybody on the shore is going, "Watch out, it's shit creek." And you're going, "What are you talking about? It's fine." Then you get out and you're covered in shit and you go, "Oh, that was shit creek." So there are some good things in there. That's my first point. I find about one in 14 things worth my time looking at. Somebody has thrown something in there that they thought had value. And I agree with that. It's not a political thing, really. It's just there's something of value, something to do with the veterans or the environment or some sort of tip or a story that I could read that's like, oh, the world's not coming to an end. Oh, the world's always been coming to an end. Ah, the world comes to an end for 135,000 people every day. I forget that. So there are things of value in there. But the other 13 things, I'm like, are you effing kidding me? That was the first thing. One in 14, I counted, that have value to me. Obviously, to you, it might be something different. Some sports stuff, videotapes that are, you know, from old-time baseball or football, all good. These things are non-threatening to me. They're not offensive. They're just stuff. The other 13 items, I got to crack my neck a little bit and shake it off and get around, walk around the room and go, really? But you can't see it when you're in it. So when I get out of it, it gets really clear. The second part of it is, it's a landfill for sure. It's confirmed to me because of those other 13 things that get tossed in. And if you don't know this already, then I can't help you. But nobody changes their mind in the landfill. Nobody changes their mind. It is just a free-for-all. Nothing changes. Everybody barfs up in there. Sometimes good stuff, mostly stuff that doesn't fit. And then we go on to the next thing. And it's like it all gets, it, just like a landfill. Listen, I have experience with a landfill. When I was in college, and even in my last year or two of high school, I worked construction. And I was the first guy to say, look, I'm tired of running a 60 or 80-pound jackhammer all day. I'll drive the truck to the dump. And when you go to the dump, you have to get weighed and all that kind of stuff. And then you got to go drive in there. And you got to wait for the guy to signal you to back up. And then you hit the lever inside, put the power takeoff button in, and off it goes. And you dump everything in. So for us, it was all concrete stuff. And they wanted that because you can build layers with it. But I saw more stuff at that landfill that has stuck with me, and I mean physically sometimes, and the smell, that I realized very quickly that the metaphor of a landfill for Facebook really fit for me. I've seen it. And it gets layer upon layer upon layer, and then it gets covered over in layer. And then sometimes the same shit gets thrown in there. It just looks different on a different day, and you get layered over, layered over, layered over. And pulling out of that, driving out of the dump, we always went through this wash process. And it was like a spray thing. Not all dumps had it, but this one particular had it. So you didn't carry all the shit that you drove into back out onto the road, so there wouldn't be a lawsuit. And they're like, see, you're carrying this shit out of here. You're not supposed to have that. So the truck would actually get kind of washed, an underbody wash, to get the shit off it. I think at times we all need an underbody wash to get the shit off us. So staying out of that was a really good thing for me. And even though I tiptoed in and out to answer messages, I felt like I have to be careful on how I spend my time there, even though unsocial media has become so prevalent, it's a way of communicating. And that was the other part I thought, I forget sometimes that for a lot of people, this is the only way they can connect, because of where they live or whatever circumstances they're in, this is a serious lifeline to other people. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. I honor that because I've used that. I mean, I'll put books up, I'll do a BOGO, buy one, get one free book thing or whatever it may be. And it's a way for me to connect with people. It's become part of business. If you're not doing that, then you're out of business in some way, shape, or form, even though I have not mastered this in any way, shape, or form. So it's still a learning curve for me, but I watched people who simply got on and said, good morning, have a nice cup of coffee. You know, they were just reaching out, hoping to connect with someone, and it becomes like what we used to do on the phone for hours or at the back fence. It's become that. It's kind of our virtual back fence, virtual rotary dial phone, where you would catch up on gossip and talk to people and like that. So there's that aspect to it. And then there's this other piece to it that I just find so telling about us as a species. I've always said, you know, when you squeeze oranges, you know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get orange juice. You don't get tomato juice. When you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice. And these days, social media becomes unsocial, and it squeezes people virtually, but also physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally in the real terms of life. It squeezes us because it puts us into groups and people start arguing and all this kind of stuff. And I think most of it, we used to be able to leave this stuff at a bar somewhere and walk away from it. Now it's there all the time. It's like a 24/7 bar. You walk in and the same idiots at the end of the bar barking about stuff they have no idea about. They're just spouting off opinion. And in the old days, you'd buy them a beer and they'd shut up. These days, that doesn't happen. So that squeeze point, the vice that social media is, squeezes people and you see what comes out. And I'm amazed at what people will share that's private. I'm fascinated by that. But maybe I shouldn't be at this point. It's not going to roll back. And the second thing is, again, I've had people respond to something I put up like they would never say this to me in person. I'd knock their right on their keister. To be anonymous is easy on the internet. All you can just put something up and buzz off and you're done. And there's no real physical interaction there, but there's definitely a physical reaction. So that stuff all fascinates me. And as I was out this week, I took a 5.5 mile walk yesterday, which is not something I do all the time. I need to do it more. I go to the gym a lot, but I don't do a lot of walking. And I took this long walk with a lot of things on my mind. And one of it was like, wow, this is awesome. This is real life. I don't have to look at the sunrise on a picture somebody put up, even though it's nice to see one from Oahu or something. But the more I reconnected with real life, the less I wanted to jump back in the landfill. And yet it's a little bit of a prerequisite for what I do as a career in the media, connecting with people, doing this podcast, writing books, what have you. So it's all about regulation. We all grew up with everything in moderation is fine. And I think because of the creatures we are, because we get hard-lined and hard-wired to these connections emotionally, it's hard to put them down. So next time you're in the landfill and you find yourself getting stuff stuck to you, just remember it's okay to get out and do an underbody wash. Leave it alone for a while. I guarantee you, if you check in 3 days later, people are still doing the same thing they were doing 3 days earlier. So nothing changes. And we have to regulate that. I think it's really, really important. So as I pull back and everything's not under a microscope, I look through the telescope. And on one hand, it is the same shit over and over and over again. and we expect the result to be different, even though we address the problems the same way each time. And it's fascinating human behavior. It's debilitating, but it's also fascinating at the same time. And so spending time with people who, you know, go round and round and round and round and expect the result to be different, it's not good for me. And so I've made the insistence on myself to spend less time in that, and that when I do dive into the landfill, it will simply be something that is offsetting to the erosion that we in seem insist on creating. So that's why I do the Sacred Sunday songs for all these years. I'm glad people enjoy them, but it's my therapy first and foremost. When I do the Wednesday rant, it's to blow off some steam on stuff that I just find, how can we not see this? You know, it's like when you talk about somebody who's sleepwalking, the very worst thing you can do is wake them up. It just pisses them off. My job, our job should be becoming as fully awake as possible. Whether somebody else gets it or not, that's not up to us, as painful as that may be. And so waking up means it's like the curse of consciousness, right? So you start to see things you didn't see before and you go, hey, look, can you see this? Like, nope, can't see it. And then you try to convince someone to see it and just makes them mad, and then nothing changes, and then you find you're at square one. So whatever time I have left, it's about becoming as fully awake as possible. And I've chosen and been given a platform to say some things, and I'm going to use it. Always have, always will. And whether anybody gets it or not, it's kind of like secondary to the fact that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I appreciate you spending time with that. So now that that's out of the way, the Freebie Friday today is another deep dive into the audio vault of my radio work over the last 22 years. And through this really cool little digital device called the Zoom, which I record all these on, I can hook up another cool little device and I can take a cassette and digitally remaster it to some degree. This can't get it all perfect because the sound's very different. And I have access to thousands of shows. And some of the stuff is just like I ran last week with Wayne Dyer and Steve Rizzo. People just, you know, these are timeless lessons and timeless conversations to me. So I have this whole kind of shelf setup of the first run. You know, I did Christopher Reeve. We had a conversation with Chris Reeve in 2002. And Wayne Dyer, as I mentioned, and Steve Rizzo right after 9/11. 2001. And now Miss Carol Channing comes to mind. 97 years old. In 2002, Let me look at the tape here. 1901. She had written a book, and the book was called I Guess I'm Just Lucky. The book wasn't coming out till September, so somehow Anne Marie, who was my producer at the time, was able to get a conversation with one of the most celebrated performers of our time. She's like translucent to me. You know, she's had her ups and downs, who hasn't, but a lot of her life has been splayed out in the headlines where most of ours isn't, unless you're on Facebook and you tell everybody. And I came across this clip, and I believe at the time, she was going to be performing at some point in Minneapolis. And because where we were located, about 250 miles east of there, we were able to, you know, have her on the show and talk about that. And it just had a great time. So this Freebie Friday is, I've already done the heavy stuff. I've always already done this is what's, you know, rubbing my rhubarb stuff. Now it's time for just a conversation with someone who I got the biggest kick out of. And laughter on a Friday was a priority on my shows, because life back then, as it is now, can be really, really tough. And as Steve Rizzo pointed out, having a humor being come to the forefront can take the edge off a lot of things. So without further delay and without further ado, here's my conversation with the one and only Carol Channing. We are back at it, Power Talk Radio, News Talk 600 WCHD. Everybody's crowding into the studio around here because they all want to know what's going on with our guest this afternoon, Miss Carol Channing. Of course, a storied history in Hollywood and on stage. And I'm looking at, I'm going to bring her on so I can kind of share this with her a little bit. Carol, are you there?
You know, yes, I'm here. Do you know Minneapolis is my favorite town to perform in?
I've heard that.
You have?
Yeah, you just told me.
I did? When did I tell you?
Just now.
Oh.
Now, Miss, yeah. Now, Carol, I have to tell you this. I'm looking at the filmography of your career.
Yeah.
And it's quite, I see here, Paid in Full, the first one, 1950.
Yeah.
1950, it said Paid in Full. You played Mrs. Peters.
Robert, I mean, wait a minute. It was Leah Cummings, Robert Cummings?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for heaven's sake. And Elizabeth Scott.
Elizabeth Scott.
You know, they were using it for an audition.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to the Paramount Theater, way up in the balcony, to see the audition. Hal Wallace used it as an audition. So I went up there. My gosh, the whole place was laughing at me. And I thought, I didn't know it was that funny.
Yeah.
But it was.
And then if I go look at the TV guest appearances, that takes us back to 1956. An episode, Three Men on a Horse. Actually, it aired in 1957.
With Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson.
Oh, yes.
And many, many stints on the Carol Burnett Show, Hollywood Squares, of course, The Love Boat, The Muppet Show. Boy, you've been busy.
Oh, I had a good time with Carol Burnett.
Yeah. Now, I just heard this the other day. They're doing something for the troops or something. Carol Burnett's troop with Harvey Korman and all that.
Isn't that great?
That is great. That is great.
Boy, that was a good show. Was it success? I don't know it.
Yeah?
I don't know anybody that does.
Really?
You know what I mean? I mean, what would I mean the secret to my success? Seems to me I'm always bungling things up.
Come on.
Really, I mean, and then finally we get it, and we're just grateful we got it straight, got it straightened out. Let me see, I just wish I knew. All I know is we're all struggling to make everything, whatever project we're on, work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the trick.
Well, I mean, America has really embraced you, and even if you look at just Hello, Dolly, they see you as that. Is it the singing? Is it the dancing? Is it your enthusiasm? What do you think that draws people into who you are?
I got a good they're very good shows, too.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody can be good in a show that isn't written well.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be written beautifully. And we had Thornton Wilder for the original, I mean, the great American writer Thornton Wilder. And we had Gower Champion. And Jerry Herman wrote the music and lyrics. My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. It's got to be a good show to begin with.
So all the pieces make the puzzle.
Although with Barbara Streisand, it wasn't a barrel of laughs. I thought.
Now, remember, you're not on that horse anymore, Carol.
I know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, naturally, I still have, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have grudges.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I roll. Well, at least Minneapolis makes you feel that way.
Absolutely. Why is Minneapolis so near and dear to your heart?
Will you please tell me why this is the best doggone... Way back, you had a Lyceum Theater,
mm-hmm.
and we could hear the audience.
Mm-hmm.
They were marvelous. And then after that, we played the Orpheum there,
mm-hmm.
and it's the best doggone theater. It's an old vaudeville house, as you know.
Now, Carol, I was telling you beforehand about... people that I've known, my parents being particular here, that had seen you in Hello, Dolly and talked about how one person, how amazing it is to have talent, to be able to hold an audience and impact an audience. And you say, you know, you really never heard that back, but you must have tons of letters and thanks from people for doing the things that you do.
Yes, yes. And I really appreciated them. But it's funny, I always wanted at the end of each show to walk down the aisle and say, now, which part did you like the best? Did you like the second act better than the first?
Mm-hmm.
And I never get to do that.
Yeah. Well, Carol Channing is joining me this afternoon on Power Talk Radio. And boy, she has just come so far and done so many different things. Now, I know you don't think that, Carol, but the people on this side of the stage, we think that. She's joining me this afternoon. We'll come back and talk more about some of the adventures that she's been in. It's not been all, you know, beer and Skittles here. Sometimes there's some tumbles people take, not just physically, but also in careers and things like that. And she's always bounced back. If you're catching us late, legend. Carol Channing joining us on Power Talk Radio. We'll take a quick time out. Take care of those.
Sure, John.
I'm sure, Carol. I mean it. Quick time out. Take care of the people that take care of us. Power Talk Radio continues after this. Carol Channing joining us this afternoon, a true legend from stage and screen, and I know this is a fact because we were talking with people that around the studio today before we even came on the air, and they couldn't believe that that you're still out there doing your thing. You're feeling good, huh?
Oh, feel wonderful.
You sound good.
You know why?
What?
I just got my book. I've been writing a book for 3 years, and I just got it back, editing it.
Yeah?
And they didn't hardly change it. They were wonderful to me.
That's a good thing.
And all of a sudden, my ribs healed, my elbow healed, the stitches in my face,
mm-hmm.
and the thumb healed, everything.
So has writing been kind of like a therapy for you?
No.
No?
No, writing is lonely, very lonely.
Yeah, yeah.
The people that need people, it's awfully lonely.
Mm.
You know?
It sounds like
But I learned to warm up to the people I was writing about.
You know, that warming up to people who need people sounds like a line from a song, Carol. Doesn't it? People.
You're so much lighter than I am. Yeah, I'm going to take this attachment off. I can't hear you, Joan.
All right.
Wait a minute. There. Now I took it off.
Much better.
No, I can't hear you at all. Oh, dear. I have to put it back on. Just a minute, John.
All right. She sounds good on this end, though. 81 years young. She's clearer than I am. Are you there, Carol? Carol? Miss Channing. Carol Channing.
Hello.
There you are.
There.
Can you hear me now?
I don't know what you asked me.
I just wanted to say hi. You can hear me now, though? You got your little setback on?
No, I can't hear you. But you know, I'm so full of my book because they approved of it and healed my broken ribs and everything. So it's called Just Lucky, I guess.
That's the name of the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it should be the first 80 years are the hardest. But Mr. Korda said, no, that's not a good title. So Mr. Korda is the best. He's the best boss in the world.
Now, when is this going to be in bookstores? Do you have any idea?
September, because it takes 9 months to print the darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a baby.
Well, yeah.
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 So it'll be out in the stores in September.
Now, Carol, when you were going back over those 80 years, there had to be some things that you didn't want to remember, but you had to. Was that difficult to write about the stuff that's tough, or was it?
You know what? I can't remember the bad things.
Really?
Isn't that strange?
No.
I think it's just as well. It's very healthy, don't you think, John?
Let it go.
I don't remember anything bad, but I sure wrote about Detroit as an audience. They're excellent.
Thank you.
And I wrote about, do we go to Detroit?
If you'd like to, we can. No, we can.
Anyway, okay, we'll go together.
You've got it.
So, and Minneapolis
mm-hmm.
and all that. Oh, those are good memories.
You know, coming up, your birthday's coming up soon.
Yes.
January, can I say what day it is?
You know, I've never celebrated my birthday.
Never once?
I was raised in a Christian Science family, and they don't believe in birthdays. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's making a big fuss about my 80th or 81st birthday. I can't remember what it is.
Oh,
no, Clinton, as President Clinton said, now I want you all to sing Happy Birthday Carol in the White House with all the governors there. It was the first governor's dinner and all.
Uh-huh.
So I said, gee, Mr. President, I was born into a Christian Science family. I've never had a birthday. He said, then this is your first birthday.
So you're only about 30.
I didn't know what to say about it, and everybody sang it, and I was thrilled to pieces. And George Burns was there. He said, listen to me, Carol. Tell him you don't know how your second birthday is ever going to top this. So that's what I said. I'm not that clever, but George
Well, your birthday is coming up. It's going to be January 31st,
yes.
And that is a great thing. And there's also something that you're going to be working on here shortly. It's we just had Sabrina Kay on yesterday about these fashion designs all on computer.
And I missed that whole last sentence. What?
I said we talked about yesterday with Miss Sabrina Kay. We talked about computer generated fashion design, and I guess they're gonna deck you out on the computer.
Yes, they're making me a dress so I can appear in San Francisco with the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir. Did you know? Ever since kindergarten, I've never been able to sing, John, with the girls or the boys, but the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir sings in my key.
Carol.
Isn't that marvelous?
It is marvelous.
I finally found somebody I can sing with.
There you go. And we're all happy now.
Yes.
So we're going to take our third break, okay? I know you've had enough breaks in the last little bit of time, but I'll take the break, okay?
Wait a minute. I'm going to shift to the other ear.
You just hold on. Carol Channing joining me this afternoon. Quick time out. Take care of the people that take care of us. More Power Talk Radio to follow right after this.
This is John Powers, author of How to Keep the Promises You Make to Yourself. The power continues after a short break here on Power Talk Radio on News Talk 600 WCHT.
Lexi Brockway-Potamkin, author of What is Spirit, and you are listening to Power Talk Radio with John St. Augustine, the most powerful hours on radio today, on News Talk 600, WCHT.
We're back at it, Power Talk Radio on News Talk 600 WCHT. Carol Channing joining me this afternoon. She was born in Seattle, Washington a few years ago, and a daughter of a prominent newspaper editor who was very active, as she mentioned, the Christian Science movement. At just 2 weeks of age, her father's work took the family to San Francisco, where Carol was raised, schooled, and eventually found work as a model. Through determination, hard work, and her family's support, not to mention a mandatory IQ test, for which she scored one of the highest recorded results, Carol was able to attend Bennington College in Vermont that had one of the few existing arts programs in the country. She majored in drama and dance, was able to supplement her income by taking parts in the Pocono Resort area. She was a recipient of the 1995 Lifetime Achievement Tony Award. Ms. Channing has been a star of international acclaim since a Time magazine cover story hailed her performance as Lorelei Lee in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, writing, quote, "Perhaps once in a decade, a nova explodes about the Great White Way with enough brilliance to reillumine the whole gaudy legend of the show business." And that's who you get a chance to spend a little bit of time with this afternoon. And Carol Channing joins us on Power Talk Radio. Okay, Carol, I got cranked up here, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was quick.
That was quick.
Now you got through that.
Now, these falls off stages are things that have become like a little hobby of yours.
It's just that I'm nearsighted.
Yeah?
Yeah. So each theater, as we tour, I have to pace out how far the end of the stage is. But I keep falling off the stage. It's usually where the drummer is, though.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of helps me.
Mm. When I was looking at over the bio, I remember a movie that I saw called, Let's Face It, it was Danny Kaye's only musical that he was in, I believe.
That's right.
And I just thought he was a phenomenal performer. You've been around the George Burns and the Danny Kayes and everybody else. Does it seem almost like a fairy tale to you for some reason?
Once you know these people, they're like all people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get just as excited meeting the garbage collector. You know, once you know them, you feel at home with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's really true. And George Burns, of course, is a bloody genius, was.
Yes.
I mean, he really helped me with my act. And boy, he was never wrong about anything. That man was infallible. The least of his talents was performing.
Really?
Yes, he was really like Flo Ziegfeld. He knew how to present a show.
Mm.
And I was terribly lucky that he helped me.
Carol, you're still in such demand. You still keep a lot of, obviously, the book coming out this year, and you're still in demand to go out and be with people and do things.
Now you're fading again.
Yeah. Am I fading out a little? How's that? Better?
There, better.
Okay. And because you're still in such demand, you have a book coming out and things like that, can you ever have imagined doing anything else with your life than performing?
Yes, I like to paint.
Paint?
I love to paint people from the neck up. I just love to. It's the same thing as doing them, you know, as turning into them.
Mm-hmm.
And doing like review work where you jump from character to character.
Mm. You're also, your son is a very talented young man.
Yes.
He gets to be, he's a syndicated, nationally syndicated editorial cartoonist.
Oh, yes.
And he was a Pulitzer Prize finalist.
He's syndicated across the country.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And
so when the book comes out in September, the title will be, we'll see, is called what again?
It's going to be Just Lucky, I guess.
Just Lucky, I guess.
I wanted to call it The First 80 Years Are the Hardest, but Mr. Korda, Michael Korda, who is the greatest publisher in the world, I think.
I make sure I send him a tape of the show, by the way.
You're the what?
I said I'll make sure I send him a tape of this show, so, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. So, anyway, he says, no, don't do that.
Yeah, okay.
Otherwise, only 80-year-old people will read. And they don't seem to, I don't.
They're not buying a lot of books, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to go well. You have played the role in over 5,000 performances in Hello, Dolly. What is your?
I promised you a Brenner, John, that I would not. If I went over 5,000, I would not say so. Because he played the king and I 5,000 times. And he said, look, no matter how many performances you do, don't go over 5,000. So I promised him I wouldn't.
Carol.
But just quietly between us. I don't want him to turn over in the grave.
Yeah, right.
We went a little over that.
Well, that's okay. When you think about the long career you've had and the thousands, if not millions of people that are your fans all over the world, how would you like to be remembered? Is that important to you? And how would you like to be remembered?
Well, you know what? I was talking to Julie Andrews about that, to drop a name. And I said, do you feel in a long-run show that you're a little Florence Nightingale up there? And she said, yes, but I wouldn't tell another actor. she wouldn't tell anyone but another actor. But she feels the same way. And I realized my goal was always to lift people's lives from the fourth grade on, to lift their lives. And it's the most wonderful feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's the real reason that I'm in the business I'm in, and I don't want to get out of it.
Well, I am glad you sound as good as you do, and I'm glad that you're all healed up and that you have a book coming out, because it'll be like your fourth career now.
See, once people know you're 80 years old, they think it's amazing that you're upright. You know, they think it's just amazing that you can walk out and get the mail.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to do another show, doggone it.
Yeah, that's what we want to hear.
And it'll have lots of dancing in it and singing.
Now listen, when the book comes out in September, will you come back and do the show with me?
Oh, would I ever? What city are you in?
Well, we'll take care of all the particulars. Don't worry about that.
No, I want to know if you're in Minneapolis.
No, well, they get to hear it, though. We don't get to live there.
Oh, you don't?
No, I've been there quite a few times, but we don't get to live there.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, I'll meet you in Minneapolis anyway.
Absolutely. I know a nice deli there.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So it's a date.
It's a date.
It is a date.
Oh, John, I love talking to you.
Carol, you are a gem. You are a gem, and I appreciate you spending time with us this afternoon. Miss Carol Channing, ladies and gentlemen, look for her book coming out this fall and see her at a stage near you very soon, I'm sure. Carol, thanks so much. You take care.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye, Gary.
Bye-bye, darling.
Bye-bye.
She's a delight. 97 years young, still going at it. I actually sent her a Facebook request yesterday. I don't know if somebody's watching the page for her or she's actually doing it herself. I wanted to let her know that I had found this clip and what a joy it was to spend time with her and just a little bit, just to laugh and look at things. And, you know, anybody that was around George Burns has my attention. So it's all good. Listen, I appreciate you listening to Freebie Friday. If you're interested at all to become a subscriber, easy to do. When you're clicking out any of the shows that say subscribe to premium content, you click it. And you put your information in, follow the prompts, $20 a month, and 4 to 6 times a month you get shows like this and much, much more. So I thank you for that. I thank you to my subscribers. I thank you for listening. Until next time, safe travels. Oh, yeah. Before I go out, I want to make sure I mention this. The music in this show, this particular show, is by my friend David Stoddard. His stuff gets worked into here. Mark Cleveland's stuff gets worked into these shows. The late, great Pete Huttlinger's music gets worked into these shows. A couple other people. And I am thrilled that their genius gets to be part of this. So if you're looking for something a little bit different, you don't want to just go out and pound the Billy Joel stuff all the time, go find Dave Stoddard on the internet and buy his music, and then he won't have to do other things. So I just want to thank Dave for allowing his music to be part of this. Mark, same way, and a shout out to Aaron Morris Huttlinger, who has allowed Pete's music to be part of this as well. So again, until next time, safe travels. Adios.